call that she's taking right now will be Michael Lefebvre of the Mackinac Center. Going to talk about taxes, what's going on in Lansing. Can they come to an agreement? Can't they come to an agreement? I guess that is the thing that we're going to have to find out this morning. And Cynthia, is he on the line?
He is, and he is Mike Lefebvre. Mike Lefebvre is part of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He's in charge of the Maury Fiscal Policy Initiative. And I'm chuckling because when I answered the phone, I said, "Hey, Mike, it's you." He said, "Yep, more drama in Lansing." And it sounds like as the world turns into an ever-devolving spiral.
Did you tell him what we played for the music going in?
No, I didn't have a chance. But
you there, Michael?
I am indeed.
The song that I played going into this was War, and Why Can't We Be Friends?
Well, that's going to be playing a lot over the next few days in Lansing if present trends continue. Today marks basically the fifth day of what has been something of an extraordinary marathon session to hike taxes, cut spending, or some combination of both. I've been following it throughout the weekend, and it's just been a fascinating, dramatic chess match.
And we appreciate that, Mike. As I've commented to Bob more than once, in some respects, we may be tired hearing about the budget, but from the other side, I want to keep on top of what's going on so I'm not blindsided by something. So thanks for all the time you put into this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I get paid to do it, and I love my job. So this is easy, and I'm delighted that you invited me on the show to talk about it. Over the last 3 days, there's actually been cots laid out on the House floor for members to get rest because they've been keeping their members in and enforcing their participation for many of those days with the state police. Andy Dillon has called them in on the House side and said, "You're not going anywhere until we solve this problem." But after 3 days, they decided, with people getting agitated and tempers starting to flare, to give them a little break, and they went back at it yesterday and are going to be discussing budget solutions again today. As you know, we're facing a $1.75 billion shortfall between what's coming in to the Treasury and what legislators want to spend. And that has rubbed a lot of people raw because some people just want to reach deeper into the pockets of Michigan taxpayers to come up with the extra revenue, and others want to cut spending, and still others want to cut spending and raise taxes. So the battle is being fought down there. And what's ironic here is that Andy Dillon can't even get 10 or 11 of his own Democrats to vote in favor of the tax increase, in part due to the fact that they're afraid of the voter wrath that will occur in their very competitive districts.
Mike, I was glad to hear you mention that there are some who talk in terms of raising taxes and making cuts, because as closely as you've watched this, aren't you a little suspicious when you hear anybody begin a sentence with, "All we need to do is"?
Well, everyone likes to sum up their solution with the silver bullet type of description, not only because it makes a better soundbite, but because that's their view. Obviously, politics is the art of the possible, so compromises are believed often to be very necessary. But right now, you have one side of the aisle who believes that more cuts should be necessary than less cuts, and one side that believes more taxes are necessary than cuts, and therein lies the rub.
I've heard a compromise described as an agreement where nobody's happy.
Or a deal where the other person thinks they have swindled the other party.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the interesting dynamic in Lansing over the last few weeks, if not months, has been the work of the Michigan Taxpayer Alliance, which has parked a giant pink pig out on the front lawn of the Capitol to remind the legislators that the spending isn't necessary and they might get recalled if they vote for higher taxes. And this is what I was thinking of when I brought up the drama angle in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
In response to that yesterday, apparently the mayor of Lansing had one of his city fire trucks park in front of the big pink pig so no one could see it. So there's these little one-upsmanships taking place all over Lansing, and coalitions are forming and reforming in an attempt to strike a deal that might raise taxes as much as $1.75 billion for Michigan taxpayers. Now, I bring that up sort of as a segue because also in today's paper is the story that state real estate foreclosures are up 126% from August 2007 August 2006 to August 2007.
I've been following that. It is alarming.
So with the as backdrop for a possible income tax hike, you have Michigan losing 350,000 jobs since 2000, the highest unemployment rate in the nation, the only state in the union from 05 to 06 with negative economic growth, 0.5%. The nation as a whole saw average growth of 3.4%. From 05 to 06, we were 49th in personal income growth. We haven't been below the national average by this much, 6.7%, since the Great Depression. Our state gross domestic product ranking among the states has dropped from 23rd to 35th from 1995 to 2006, and we're 49th in home price appreciation.
Thank you, Michael. I am now totally and completely depressed.
Depressed. Well, there's one more coup de grace to add.
Yes.
We are essentially masking our unemployment rate because the rest of the nation has a robust economy. We have places that Michigan citizens can move to find gainful employment. Should the nation fall into a recession as a whole, we could see the type of double-digit unemployment rates that we saw in 1982, which, by the way, was the last year we saw migration rates outbound at the same level that we currently have today.
And you may have noticed that the Fed uttered that nasty word yesterday or the day before, recession.
Recession. And that's one reason why the market has built into its decisions this morning that the Fed is going to cut interest rates. They think that inflation has been tamed enough and that the economy has cooled to the degree that they can start cutting rates again.
Mike, you mentioned Michigan lost 350,000 jobs. But I'm also aware of, thanks to one of your excellent pieces that appears on the Mackinac Center's website, the thing about job churning, where certain number of jobs disappear, but simultaneously or within the same period of time, X number appear. So is that 350,000 a net?
That's a net, yeah. That is absolutely a net. And the idea behind the job churning argument is that the state has very poor powers to affect economic development when it tries to target favors to particular corporations or industries, whether it's a low-interest loan, a subsidy, a tax credit, or an abatement. It's best to just clear the field for everyone, what we call a fair field of no favors, because it's very hard to pick winners and losers in the marketplace, as is evidenced by this massive job churn. In, I think it was 03 as our last number, the state of Michigan created 500,000 brand new jobs, but it destroyed about 510,000 new jobs for a net loss. So given that massive churn, we argue that it's impossible for the state to run economic development programs. In fact, that's one of the solutions we have for our budget problem. Eliminate the entire Michigan Economic Development Corporation, which has taken tens of millions of dollars out of the productive economy simply to pay its staff, let alone give away gifts to particular individuals or businesses or industries.
That's got to be a hard sell, Mike, because it flies in the face of what many probably think of as conventional wisdom.
Conventional wisdom that the government can do something proactively to create jobs beyond just keeping the streets clean and safe and having a court system. Over time, I think that people are going to lose that illusion because we have been in free fall. Our economy has been in free fall really since the creation of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. They just don't have the powers that are necessary to affect economic growth and development in the state the way they claim they do. And they can run endless ads with starring Jeff Daniels about how great the state of Michigan is to do business and to live in, but that's not going to change our economy unless fundamental changes are made. And we make recommendations not only to improve the economy here at the Mackinac Center, but to balance the budget without raising taxes.
You know what I'd like to do right now, Mike, since we've mentioned the center more than once? Let's tell the folks what the website is.
Sure. The website is www.mackinac.org. The Mackinac Center is a free market research institute located in Midland, Michigan. We write studies and commentaries on public policy issues of the day and almost always make a recommendation to improve particular policies.
And I've always enjoyed going to that site because I learn so much more.
A budget deficit of $1.7 billion. Michael?
Yes.
How can the governor declare a deficit when we don't have a budget? Or is this just what she wants to spend over and above what we spent last year.
That's precisely the case. They recognize that the governor's proposed budget for the fiscal 2008 year is $1.75 billion more than the revenue that is coming in. And no one is ready to necessarily, or fewer necessarily ready to cut back on what has traditionally been these government-funded programs and positions and properties, for instance. They're maintaining properties all over the state. And the $1.75 billion deficit is essentially the difference between what they want to spend and what they've got the money to spend. And it's pretty much conventional wisdom that that's the gulf, and has been for some months. We expected this to be solved some time ago, but they're still squabbling over competing visions about how big state government should be.
Not just competing visions, Mike, but I'm also thinking they don't even have an agreement as to what are essentials. We talked a little bit with that, it was just yesterday, about with Kevin Elsenheimer. What are essentials and what are luxuries?
Yeah, and that would probably take quite a bit longer, simply due to the fact of entrenched interests declaring their particular area off limits. I remember in 2003, when I produced a budget study showing how to cut $2 billion from the state budget, I went down to Lansing over a hearing with the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, which is being threatened with budget cuts. And not a single person up there saying the MEDC should stay in business was willing to offer one single penny of cuts. They said, we need it all. This is too vital for the state of Michigan. Every single department has a team of people willing to testify to that fact. But, you know, we actually have a state-sponsored swine quiz bowl. Now, if you can't get rid of a state-sponsored swine quiz bowl for people who are interested in pig farming in the future, you know, young people, you can't talk about having cut to the bone. You can't even talk about having cut to the pork. If you'll forgive me, that's fine. Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. The state owns a ski area in the UP called the Porkies. Yes, believe it or not, the Porkies.
In the Porcupine Mountains, yeah.
In the Porcupine Mountains. We recommended a long time ago carving that out. There's no reason for the state to own its own ski area. The state owns and runs its own motel lodge in Roscommon County, and statutorily limits who can use it to government and nonprofit groups, usually of an environmental nature. These are some of the more outrageous items, in our view, that continue to get state support. But we've also taken rather bold positions on reforming state government, whether it involves reforming education, healthcare for educators in Michigan, or even privatizing the University of Michigan, which is an idea that we floated a couple years ago.
Didn't float very much, though, did it?
Well, not very long, but you know what? Many of our visionary ideas do not. When we first came out with the idea of charter schools 17, 18 years ago, it was hard. It was practically ignored, and now they're practically ubiquitous. So it may take time to root, to get root, but we believe that these ideas are worth discussing, and if it takes a decade or two decades to adopt, then so be it. But at least we're talking about fresh ideas. You know, one idea that we continue to pound home for saving $65 million a year and still comes up in debate is another thing that's being ignored in Lansing and would be an easy way to save tens of millions of dollars. And that would be devolving state police road patrols to the counties. There's nothing that prohibits counties, from talent-wise, from being able to police their roads in their own areas where state police are now doing the job. All you have to do is devolve that responsibility and pass down the money that is necessary to do so. And you could save $65 million a year simply shifting officers from blue uniforms to brown uniforms.
One of the things that two things. Kevin Elsenheimer, we were talking to him, said if you cut out all the new monies that the governor is trying to spend in the next year, and some of the other lawmakers, be they Republican or Democrat, he said, you know, we don't have a budget together yet. He says, I think the deficit could be only maybe $100 or $200 million, not a billion or more. He said, we just can't spend anymore. We got to stay where we are, and maybe just up it a little bit, because there's contracts that have to be paid out. Number two, I quizzed him. I said, look, Wayne, Macomb, and Oakland County, that's the sheriff of those counties, fiefdom. The sheriffs in those three counties, for sure, are the second most important person in those counties next to the county executive. None of those sheriffs, a lot of the township police chiefs and everything else, don't want the state police around. They do not want them because it's a fiefdom in those counties. Why not close all the state police posts in those three counties and move all those state troopers out state where they're appreciated, and now we've got a real viable state police force that can do what they're supposed to do with county sheriff departments that want them around and want their services. And that's got to save a lot of money just in driving, because all they do in those three counties is basic freeway patrol. Help me here.
That is correct. They do freeway patrol. You're just not going to find the magnitude of savings that the Mackinac Center has estimated at $65 million. I think that every bureaucracy, whether it's a public sector or private sector bureaucracy, not only wants to survive, but thrive. And I think that one of the reasons that many county sheriffs are interested in this devolution is that they can expand their own little empires, for lack of a better description. But if they can do that while saving the state taxpayers millions and millions of dollars and providing equal, if not better, services, then in this case, I would be for that.
What about the new? What about spending this almost $80 million for a new state police headquarters building in downtown Lansing? When a lot say, well, we've got all the land out there at the training center and beautiful stuff out there, we can just do it there. Why do we have to be downtown where there's no parking?
Yeah, the Mackinac Center was opposed to this when it was going on. There was a spending spree towards the end of the Engler years, and I think that the state police property got swept up into the spending mix. If you go down to Lansing in 90 versus 2000, you see a massive difference in the architecture downtown due to the spending binge. And it's not the first time it's happened. You know, in I think it was the summer of 2001, the legislature was about to dismiss itself when the Treasury called and said, hey, guess what? The economy is so good, we have $600 million more in the bank than we expected.
Let's spend it.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than banking it, they went on a spending spree, which included the purchase of a new polar bear exhibit in the Detroit Zoo. I think it included a new iron ore museum in the UP. I think a million of it went to, if memory serves, a economic development air zoo in Kalamazoo.
Bringing home the bacon.
Yeah, they were bringing home the bacon, and I think only two legislators on the House side voted against the bill.
So what do we do, Michael? How do we get these people together? How do we get the governor to stop saying, we just need to spend on this, and I want to start this new program, and it's going to cost this, and you got lawmakers who are saying, okay, and I want to spend this because my town needs it. How do we get them back in line and saying, last year you spent this much. We understand you might have to spend a few more shekels because, well, universities have contracts they have to meet. School systems have contracts they have to meet. How do we get them back in line? Call them?
Well, obviously that's one thing you can do, telephoning your representatives and expressing your opinion. However, I would suggest that the incentive to spend by legislators is so strong that it tramples the wishes of the people, regardless of how many phone calls you make, regardless of how many letters you sign. One thing that I think works is constitutional prohibitions on increases in spending, what has come to be known as taxpayer bill of rights, where you emblazon in the Constitution that the legislature may only spend increases every year beyond a baseline amount that would be 3% plus or minus population changes. So if inflation goes up 3% and your population goes up 3%, you may only spend 6% above the previous year's budget. Now, that has been put into place. The strongest one was back in Colorado, and for a while I think that it worked miracles for their economy because people could move there knowing that the next day wouldn't result in a huge tax increase for new programs. And I think it worked for quite a while until some spending interests got involved and amended the Constitution again so they could spend more on education. However, that is just one way to limit what legislators can take from the people in a particular state.
What about going to a part-time legislature so they aren't down there talking about spending every day?
Yeah, you know, the joke in Lansing is that they're already a part-time legislature because that's how often they work. They just get paid full-time.
Oh.
Yeah, it kind of stings. But depending on how you measure it, you know, at least half of the state legislators in the country are part-time. And you could look at Texas, for instance. It meets, I think, a couple months every other year, and not argue that they're better managed than Michigan. You could actually argue that they are better managed than Michigan, yet they don't spend the type of time in Lansing that we do. You know, a few years ago, we asked one of the Republican leaders down in Lansing, why not go to a part-time legislature? And the only answer he could muster was, someone has to answer the phones. And we did not think that that was a very acceptable answer.
Call forwarding.
Well, you know, I can see from a self-interest point of view why legislators wouldn't want to give up their positions. They are board members of a $40 billion corporation. And they enjoy those positions. They enjoy the perquisites of power, which at the very least just include being a high-profile member of their community. But there's also compensation. You know, very few legislators take pay cuts to join the legislature. And that brings me to actually a piece that I wrote some time ago last February called What Price Government, where I actually do a comparison contrast with what work government employees do. Not only in general, but specific. I actually break out job titles and duties, and I compare them with their private sector counterparts. And overwhelmingly, except for maybe the high-end doctors, the government employees are doing better than the people who pay their salaries, especially when you include healthcare compensation. You know, the average Michigan State employee receives salary and fringe benefits worth nearly $75,000 a year. The average salary and fringe benefits for a private sector person is about $58,000. Now, that's just an average, but remember, I actually went down and broke it out into job categories and matched up job duties with people in the public and private sector, and I still found out that the public sector did better in almost every case.
Something's very upside down in there. And when you're talking about part-time legislature versus full-time, I would submit that this last week alone is proof that simply working more hours doesn't do any good. Because even though they've been literally locked in rooms, it's not as though they've made any forward progress.
No, they haven't. But, you know, yesterday, it's funny, and this is more of the chess game that I told you about earlier. Each side had one person on their team claim that progress has been made, and then the claim that progress has been made was quickly discounted by another member of their team just hours later on each side, both the House and Senate, which suggests to me that that is the message they're trying to control. They want to release information that says they are moving the ball forward, and yet they want to discount it immediately with someone else saying, no, we really haven't recommended a tax hike, or we really haven't come to an agreement on spending cuts.
Mike, do you think meaning the legislators, really believe that their constituents are that stupid?
Well, you know what? Politicians have something working to their benefit that economists call rational ignorance. Most people are so busy raising their kids, working a job, paying their bills, mowing their lawn, that they don't have time to pay attention to this type of minutia. And that's why the Mackinac Center works so hard to get its message out. We try to keep people up to date on these, not only in terms of the machinations that go on in Lansing, but the policy consequences that end up changing lives, really. I mean, how many grandparents are going to be separated from their grandchildren because Michigan has the number one outbound migration rate in the country as a direct result of bad policies. That's the type of impact that these decisions in Lansing have, and we try to educate people about them.
And it can really hit home. I do want to take advantage of the fact that you're down there and we're up here and ask you, did you happen to notice on your drive in today what gas prices are down there?
You know what? I pumped some gas this morning, but I didn't even bother looking. I'm resigned to high prices.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm just curious because Bob carried the
AAA. Traverse City has the highest at $3.99. $2.99. Petoskey, Charlevoix area is around $2.89.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say Midland is in that range.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you so much.
Oh, it's
Once
my
more,
pleasure.
Let's give that website because it's certainly worth exploring and keeping up on things.
www.mackinac.org.
Terrific. Thank you for the insider's view of what's going on down there right now.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Great.